As I go through, I tend to get a little tired as I go, and so this will start to drop like this, and if it does, just wave and scream, and that'll remind me, because my voice also starts to drop after a while. I want to thank the university and thank Northern Pass for inviting me to come down. I want to start off with saying I'm not an expert on hydroelectricity, but I am an expert in Canadian energy policy. And I've been, for about the last three decades, I've been involved in trying to prevent these kinds of mega projects from going forward because they just don't make a lot of sense. So when we received the invitation to come down, I got my intrepid crew of interns on it, and they've given me about 55 slides to show you. So I don't know if we'll get through all of them, but we'll go through and we'll talk a bit about about is it really green, about what's happening in Canada in terms of energy, and what's and then we'll give you a couple of case studies. One, James Bay, which is directly connected to the project that you're concerned about here in New Hampshire, and about Churchill Falls, which could be connected to that line somewhere down the road if that actually goes forward. And then we'll have some time to talk about it, if that's okay with you. Okay. You know, we all know how hydroelectric power works. You build a dam, you hold back water, and you let it drop through a turbine, and you generate electricity. It's very simple and nice and clean, and it's supposed to be the best, greenest power there is. But that's not the way it's turned out, because we're not building little dams across streams. We're building giant dams across huge rivers. And in Canada, we like to dam up five or six rivers and divert them over to one dam and make a huge reservoir. And that makes a lot of environmental impact. So let's just try and go through some of them as we go. So it disrupts the natural currents. This is critical in terms of habitat for animals and those animal and the people who depend on those animals and fish in the regions where these dams are. And it just happens that all the dams in Canada happen to be. At least the ones that are going to supply this power line happen to be in the territory of First Nations. And those First Nations, to varying degrees, were consulted and to varying degrees accepted these constructions. But most of them just had a gun to their head and they had to accept them. So they did the best they could in terms of getting some financial compensation. In some cases, they received no financial compensation. I know I've heard stories of company men driving through and handing out cash to natives to get them to accept deals. That doesn't happen anymore, but they still don't have very much choice. Anyway, so the species such as salmon and eels, they migrate up rivers. And when you put a big dam on them, they can't migrate up those rivers as easily. And it becomes disoriented. And we flood huge areas of habitat. I mean, unbelievably huge areas of habitat. And we'll get to some numbers in a minute. But once you've made that dam, then invasive species and our non-native species can easily take over. And there's lots of avenues for them to get into these areas and take over and push out native species. One of the major concerns we have is with mercury poisoning. Organic mercury is part of the ecosystem, but when it's attacked by bacteria in an area like a reservoir, it turns into a heavy metal version of mercury, which is toxic. And we'll see as we go that has actually gotten into a lot of people in Canada and in other places around the world because that mercury is bioaccumulated in the fish. And we'll talk some more about that as we go. The other ones is greenhouse gas emissions, and this is the one that's the most controversial. It's the one that the industry likes to tell you this is green. It's not about climate. You know, we don't have any emissions. They sound a lot like the nuclear people when they talk about this, but they leave out a lot of facts. Yes, the generating of electricity does not burn anything, doesn't produce any greenhouse gases, but the decaying material under those reservoirs produce massive amounts of methane and carbon dioxide, and they're released as the dam operates. And we won't talk too much about it, but there is a tremendous energy input in building these dams. These are giant constructions full of thousands or hundreds of thousands of tons of concrete. And concrete, of course, is just melted limestone. And how do you melt limestone? You make greenhouse gas emissions. And decommissioning dams is also full, uh, problems in terms of emissions. This is just a little map showing the CO2 emissions from dams in Canada. Canada is actually responsible for about 13% of all hydroelectric power generated in the world. Not bad for a country that only has 35 million people in a 7 billion per population planet. But we are inundated. We have huge power resources, and we've tried to exploit every single last one, and we are intend to do the governments in Canada intend to exploit every single hydro opportunity in Canada so that we can actually do something for you, which is to sell you the electricity. The other point is that when you build a dam in a boreal forest, which the dams in Quebec and Labrador, which we're talking about today, are, you're actually taking away carbon sinks. Boreal forests are very good at accumulating carbon in the tree growth. You build dams and create reservoirs. You lose the capability of that land to actually absorb carbon in the future. So you have to actually calculate that in when you try to do the math on the climate change implications of building dams. So again, I'm not going to try and do the math for you, but it's very complicated, and it's not that clean, clear idea that the proponents of large dams have you believe. So what we think is that it's not green if it's not run of the river, if there's any diversion of water, if there's interbasin transfers of water, if the flow modifications interferes with the actual annual cycle of flow, and the reservoir, and there's reservoirs. So all the big dams that are connected to the potential power line coming through New Hampshire don't qualify. They all are huge dams, and they all have all these problems. Now, I just want to take a minute and talk about what's going on in Canada right now. I work in Ottawa, the capital of Canada. Before I became the executive director of Sierra Club, I used to be in charge of our climate change campaign and our energy campaigns. So I can tell you a great deal about Canada's energy. And in Canada, we like to talk about producing our energy resources, but in fact, they're not energy resources for Canada. They're an export commodity. And in every area of Canada, we are trying to exploit our resources to sell either oil and gas, coal, or electricity to the United States. And so in every region of Canada, there are environmental fights going on right now about continuing to try and expand the production. Did you realize that Canada is the U.S.'s largest supplier of oil? We're ahead of Saudi Arabia. We've been there for several years now. There's a lot of people in Canada who are proud of that. I'm not so sure I am. And also, we are huge suppliers of hydropower to the United States. There are proposals to build new dams in Quebec, in Labrador, and in northern BC, and in Manitoba, entirely to ship power to the United States. Canada, we did actually commissioned an energy study about 10 years ago, trying to demonstrate to the Canadian government that we could actually meet our greenhouse gas emission reductions targets. And we discovered that Canada actually could supply all its energy needs with existing power plants, or existing hydrological power plants that existed 10 years ago, with a little bit of cogeneration for industrial power, and still meet all our contracts to supply the United States. So we have a huge surplus of potential here, and it is the key driver of the politics of Canada right now. And again, it's the same with oil and gas. We are trying to find as much of our resources. We want to dig it up, pump it up, and get it here as fast as possible. There's some notion, especially in Western Canada, that if we don't sell all the fossil fuels in the next 10 years, that the market will die. Wouldn't that be nice? Again, here's another little graphic illustration of all the power supply. Ironically, it's easier for several states in the United States to buy power from Canadian provinces than it is from one province to buy power from another province. The lines all go north and south. So even though there's a huge surplus in Manitoba, it actually makes more sense to sell it into Wisconsin than it does to sell it into Ontario. It's 1,000 miles closer. But there's no really east-west grid in Canada, so the sources are being developed solely to ship south. Again, here's another idea of some of the complicatedness in the pipelines, and I know, I'm sure you've all been talking about the pipeline controversies. We have one in here, one in, going across Canada, as well as one coming into the United States. But just some of the things that the World Commission on Dams said is that the average cost overrun of a dam is about 56%. So we're talking about billions and billions of dollars of investment. In fact, the Canadian government is now suggesting that there are over $500 million of resource and energy export projects that need to be funded in the next 20 years from Canada to ship energy, mostly to the United States, although lately we've been talking about trying to ship it to China as well. So we have a huge challenge in Canada. Just this last week, a second huge budget bill was put before the Canadian Parliament. It's 500 pages long, and part of it is changing the Navigable Waters Act in Canada. And this follows a 500-page budget bill that was passed last June, which has also had 500 pages, but it also had a section which basically destroyed our environmental assessment regulations for federal and federal law. And the reason for that is to make it easier for resource companies and big energy projects to go forward with having very little federal oversight. And we basically stepped back 25 years in the last year in terms of environmental regulation. And this is all to supply the United States. So Canada, I think, is can actually boast that it's now officially third world status, that we're prepared to compromise our laws and regulations in order to supply the United States. And we have lots of collaborators in Canada who want to make profit out of that. So we have a huge fight, and your battle here on this one power line is just one small part of the battle that's continental in scope. And if we're going to ever arrest climate change and address the most critical problem that we've ever faced, both in Canada and the United States, those of us who understand what's happening have to find a way to overcome the proponents of the status quo. But just let's get back to Hydro-Québec and James Bay. So if we have a series of slides here. This is a really nice aerial picture of the dam. It's a huge dam. It dammed 9 rivers and diverted them all and turned most of them into little streams and flooded an area the size of Belgium, which I think is about the same size as New England. So there's an area in northern Quebec that's all underwater to the size of Belgium that used to be a boreal forest that used to support Aboriginal groups in supplying their own needs in the north, and they were just taken away from them. And this is a map of the whole project, which is several hundred miles long and in just a huge series of dams right along the 9 rivers, as I said, producing 11,000 megawatts of power. Quebec doesn't need all this power. This project was built entirely to export power to the United States. There are several corridors, and they're looking for more corridors. So at the same time you're having the battle here, a few years ago, Quebec Hydro, which is a provincially owned or a state-owned company, bought the state-owned hydro company in the province of New Brunswick, just north of here, in order to build corridors to ship electricity to the United States. That sale didn't go through because there was a small revolt in the province of New Brunswick, and an election changed the government over it. So that project was put on hold. They'll go back again someday soon. But that's made this project that they're talking about here in New Hampshire more important to Hydro-Québec. It goes way back to the 1950s, and it's a 1950s idea. Although probably we could even go further back and say it's more like a Franklin Roosevelt kind of concept of a social enterprise in order to generate new state investment and to create new industry. And so Quebec has been trying to pursue that. And then through the 1960s and finally 1970, when they launched this project. I remember hitchhiking back from Vancouver in 1972, when hitchhiking was the thing to do, and being picked up by a soldier who had just left the military, and he was a welder, and he was telling me all about what he was going to do next. And he was going to go back to Kitchener in Ontario and buy a welding truck and go to James Bay and become a millionaire. And I'm sure he's a retired millionaire now. Because that's the image that these projects project to the public, that there are these huge jobs with great pay. And they do produce that. So it took about 15 years altogether to produce and to come into phase one. But there was a problem, is that the land was owned by the Cree. The entire area around James Bay, both on the west side and the east side, the main Aboriginal group there are the Cree. And the Cree, both in Ontario, in Manitoba, and in Quebec, have all been faced with large hydro projects that have just come along and taken their land. So the Cree have quite a history in Quebec fighting these projects. They did accept, after the dam was built, they did accept a settlement, and that's resulted in significant investment in the Quebec's north. But then when the second phase came forward, they had already realized that some of their communities, everyone in the community, had mercury poisoning. And so they said, that's enough. So the second phase, or the Great Whale Project, they organized against, and throughout the 90s, they did all kinds of fun things. They actually learned how to campaign, and I was with Greenpeace at the time, and they worked with us, and they bought a full-page ad in the New York Times as the best way to deal with Hydro-Quebec, because the customer was in New York. And one of the things we've learned in 25 years, 30 years of campaigning is that you're far more likely to succeed if you actually attack the market rather than the producer. And they succeeded in convincing Governor Comeau back in the 1990s to turn down the deal, to tear up the deal with Hydro-Quebec, and the Great Whale Project was held back. And that was a great victory for the Cree in northern Quebec. But this project has been huge. So as I said earlier, it's flooded an area the size of Belgium. Here it's called 11,500 kilometers, and it was their land. Flooding also created huge mercury contamination of fish and migratory problems. And since then, they've had a huge amount of, even though they've had lots of investment up north, they've had a huge amount of social disruption as a result. And these are people who, when this project came forward, they were still reeling from a scandal that we have in Canada called the residential school program, in which rural Aboriginals, or Aboriginals from the far north, a plane would land in your village one day, and the police would round up all the kids and say, we're taking them to school, and they'd be gone. And maybe they'd get home once or twice a year. And if they spoke their native language in those schools, they were punished, and they had a terrible time. And our native community right across the north in Canada is still reeling from that, because there are people of my generation, and I can see in this room there's lots of us of this generation, and they are the parents and the grandparents. And then this is the group of people that were faced with suddenly dealing with huge project coming into their community. So we get some of the quotes from them that we're deprived of our adequate lands. They're just huge problems. The second one case is, I want to go to Labrador, and I'll just start off by saying that I think next week, or the week after next, I'll be in court in the Supreme Court of Canada, trying to have a decision to go ahead with the Lower Churchill project be thrown out by the courts. In our system of environmental assessment, we give terms of reference to what we call a panel, and that panel then hears all the evidence from the proponent and those who have other points of view, and comes to a decision whether or not a project should be go forward. And one of the elements that they have to judge is whether or not it's financially viable. And another important element is whether or not there's an alternative, and is this project needed. And so the definition of a project being needed is kind of interesting. The proponent, Nelcor, which used to be a provincially owned corporation in Newfoundland and Labrador, has been privatized. Their definition of the need for the project was, we want to build it. And we're going to make profit if we build it, so we need to build it. But it's a very interesting project, because again, Newfoundland's not a very big place. There's less than 1 million people, and where the actual actual dam construction is in Labrador, as there are just a few thousand people. So we, the Sierra Club of Canada, has been intimately involved in this whole process. We participated in the hearings from the beginning to the end. And when the panel came back and said, well, the company hasn't proved, didn't give us any information on the alternatives, and they didn't give us enough information to determine whether it's economically viable, but on balance, we're going to just say you can go ahead and do it, but we expect that those things will be dealt with later on. Sounded to us like they hadn't lived up to the terms of reference for their mandate, so we're going to court. And as soon as we went to court, the federal government announced that they were going to actually provide loan guarantees for a provincial project for hydropower, and that's unheard of in Canada. Hydro projects are provincial, or equivalent to state, and the federal government doesn't get involved. But on this one, they decided to get involved. Very political process. Okay. So the Lower Churchill is the second phase of the Churchill production project, and it dates back decades, back to the early 60s. Again, it's 1950s people. In fact, it was the pet project for the first premier of Newfoundland. I don't know if you know, if Newfoundland wasn't a part of Canada until 1949. And when they came into Canada, they were led by a man named Joyce Smallwood, and you'll see his name pop up for the name of how they named their reservoir later on. And he really wanted to have a huge, big project that was his thing for Newfoundland. So he pursued the Churchill Falls project, which is a huge project. But the problem with it is that if you go back to that map, there's a map, it's way up here. And the market for the power is where? Way down here. And to get there, they had to go through Quebec. And so Quebec has really put it to them and said, well, we don't need your power. So if they're going to get the power from Quebec into the United States, they'd have to sell it to Quebec, and Quebec would then build a corridor and ship it here. And so they set a price of a 65-year deal for a fraction of a cent per kilowatt hour. What do you guys pay here now per kilowatt? 14, 15. Some places pay a lot more even. So Newfoundland has been, well, the world is pissed off ever since. They feel that they were ripped off. So now they want to build another dam so that they can get all the money. And so instead of shipping the power through Quebec, they want to do an undersea cable from Labrador to Newfoundland, and then an undersea cable from here, and then run the power through here and get it into New England, because they want to sell power here. So this is another huge project. Yeah, exactly. So where's the before?
Going underground, by the way.
Yeah. Well, actually, Hydro-Québec actually made a commitment back in 1998, or 1999, after the huge ice storm that we had, and you guys got it too. And because of the huge amount of damage that took place, Hydro-Québec said it was going to bury its cables. You know, and they have not dug many holes since in the last 12 years in order to do that. So we have little few shots. This was once a huge 150 foot tall, huge falls. It's now a little trickle. What happened to the before? I don't know where it went. Anyway, so Quebec and Newfoundland signed this agreement, and the real motivation for Churchill Falls 2, or the lower Muskrat Falls, is to get money that they feel they were ripped off from the first time. So they want to go forward with this next project. This has been a huge problem. This was even worse for Aboriginal peoples, this original dam. They went in and built this dam in the 1960s and early 70s, and they didn't even tell people. They just did it, and suddenly they discovered, oh, gee, where we used to go hunt caribou is now a lake. And the caribou herd was just about decimated. And in fact, there are still huge controversies about who has rights to hunt in Labrador, because the caribou population is so small. And these people, you know, they were similar to the Cree. They had the residential school problem as well, and they just were not given any recognition. But they did, over the last 20 years, build up the ability to try to defend themselves and have gotten a deal, at least this time, on this last agreement. But again, it's a huge project. It's 1,300 kilometers land in central Labrador. It's going to be covered with water. There's no record that they even talked to them in the 1960s. But they did manage to get an agreement and force a stop in the 1990s. And when the Lower Churchill project came forward, the government did sit down with Innu. But there's also a large population of Métis, or mixed Innu and Europeans, who have been there for 200 years and still have not come to any agreement with the government in terms of what their land rights are. So they are actually in court with us trying to oppose this project. And in fact, a few weeks ago, they were blockading the construction site, and they continue to do so. So they want to build 3,200 megawatts. They want to build two dams. And the first one is Muskrat Falls. The second one would be Gull Island. It's the bigger one. And there's still hearings to come on that, although our hearing process is now be abbreviated. So we have not much hope that we could actually present an environmental case and be heard. So this is a conception of what it looks like now and what it's going to look like in the future. And again, the whole project of this is to head to Power South. So it's not necessary to meet any demands for local demand for energy in Canada and even locally. And they didn't give us any assessment of what the alternatives would be. And the project could impact fisheries communities and threaten the caribou herd. We had some testimony that we arranged by a professor from the University of Manitoba, retired, who pointed out that his examination of dam projects around the world is that the silting problem that creates, because you change the silt contact in the river, it actually affects the ocean 100 miles out to sea. So these projects are not, you know, they're just unbelievable changes. They actually scour, because the heavy part of the sediment is held back behind the dam, the lighter silt moves out, so you get a different kind of silting up of the ocean in the downstream. You also get a sort of a scraping of the stream beds as it goes through, especially because the water goes really fast sometimes and then trickles to nothing and then goes really fast, and so it just basically scours out, and you end up with rock bottom to the rivers. So that's not a good habitat for marine and aquatic life. So we went to court a year ago, and we're actually lucky. This is actually very quick in my experience to get to court. Less than only a year between the time we filed to the time we're actually going to be before a judge. And that, again, we'll be in before a judge in a couple of weeks on this case. And our lawyers can, although I've never had a lawyer that wasn't confident they were going to win. But on second thought, I have never actually won. So we talked about the local people. And they're now protesting up in Labrador. An injunction was filed to stop them from protesting a couple weeks ago. Last I heard is that there's an injunction there, but they're still doing it. So, actually, we went through all 55 slides.